At the Table with Tony is brought to you by Trafe Hustlin. That's www.trafehustlin.com. Your home for all things barbecue.
My name is Giuseppe Viterale. I'm the chef owner of Ornella Trattoria Italiana in Astoria, Queens. And I'm sitting at the table with Tony Mancia.
Welcome to At the Table with Tony. I'm your host, Anthony Sciglia, but most of you know me as Tony Mangia. Come along with me as I visit the places, meet the people, and eat the food that make many communities in this great country Italian-American. Andiamo! On this episode of At the Table with Tony, we take a trip out to Astoria, Queens, to visit Ornella Trattoria Italiana. We sit down with its chef and owner, Giuseppe Vitarale, to talk about his growing up in Rofrano, Italy, as well as the cuisine of the restaurant, which is both inventive and traditional. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome to At the Table with Tony. I am your host, Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia, and we're here today at Ornella Trattoria Italiana, 2917 23rd Avenue in Astoria, Queens. And sitting across from me is the owner, Giuseppe Vitarale. Giuseppe, thank you for coming on the show.
Grazie, Tony. Thank you to come to my place.
So let's talk a little bit about Ornella Trattoria. What was the inspiration for Ornella?
My inspiration is not like a song, like you got the inspiration or a poet. Food is a necessity. So there is a long story behind that. Ornella is the name of my wife. But I come in order to talk about the restaurant, the inspiration, to talk about my life. I am from a small village in Rofrano. Rofrano is in Cilento. Cilento is a big area in provincia di Salerno, Salerno area. I grew up in the farm, but I am an architect by trade. So I grew up in the farm, so basically it's like a fish grew up in the water. You say, but that fish knows how to swim? Of course, but he doesn't know swimming is his life. So when I came here, I decided to go in a restaurant business and in the city, which is very successful. I handle the restaurant. But you know, I was no focus on the food. I was just focused on a relationship with the customers. 11 years ago, I sold the restaurant and I decided to open a place, a total different, where I was involved in everything from A to Z. The small place where I focus on food. And the name is the name of my wife. I'm married for 31 years. I have 4 sons, same wife. One. that's the worst part of that thing. I have 4 sons with 1 wife. But it's good. I just joke. To do some dish a little different, just came back to my mind some of the dish I try in my hometown, and I would try to put on the menu, which I decided to have some dish that new. In New York area, because you know, sometimes you know when you see Italian restaurant, the master of the restaurant. Let's be realistic. The master of the restaurant, they have all the name. They all have the name outside. If you look at the menu, they are photocopies. But Italian cuisine is big, thousands of recipes. One thing that bothered me the most when the people that come here say that, "What is your restaurant? Is it from South or from North? South cuisine or North cuisine?" Before, it just bothered me, but I understand that people that don't know, they are a little ignorant about food, even if they go to an Italian restaurant, but there is a big ignorance. I explained to them, if you want to be specific about Italian cuisine, you have to say that what kind of cuisine is Sicilian, Lombardia, Emilia-Romagna, Napoletana, because Italy has 20 regions.
And each region has its own cuisine.
Each region has their own cuisine. So when you decide, when you say that, no, but from north is from is white sauce, from south is red sauce. This is only in America I can see this. Why is New York? Why New York? They say, why? Because if you look, go around, you ask people where they come from, the people that have Italian restaurant, most of the 90%, they are not Italians, even they speak Italians. So most of the, I don't want to say this as a discrimination of that, because all of us, we have to be proud of where we come from. And we have to go to a restaurant, not because of where it comes from, but if you like that cuisine. Most of them, they say that, this is North Italian cuisine from Trieste. Where is Trieste? Trieste is on the borderline. When I say that, you know, Italian and Nord, they use white sauce. What is the white sauce? The cream? The white sauce? Or white clam sauce? In the South, they say the tomato sauce. Some of those dishes, they are not Italian. But chicken parmigiano, I love it. It's not really Italian. It's in the everywhere. It's everywhere.
It was created by the Italian-Americans that came here.
It's everywhere. Which all the respect for that. Mm-hmm. There is no separation. So you have to be specific. No North Italian cuisine or South. So you have to see Sicilian, Sardinia, all that. That's it.
Yeah, but you have to talk about the region.
You have to talk about the region.
And even within the regions, there are different variations to the recipes.
Of course, because, you know, Italy is campanilismo. That means campanilismo means that there is a town here, town, village here, 1,000 people, 1 mile, kilometer, another village. So sometimes even at the language that you can understand a person where it comes from, with the accent.
With the accent.
It changes even the recipe sometimes change.
Yeah, and even campanilismo is also about the church, right?
Where you campanile. So that means the campanile is the bell tower of the church. Campanilismo, that it means that you are around you try to stay around the church, so you create your own community.
Yes, yeah, which is how I guess lots of communities sprung up throughout Italy.
That's where it is before. Yeah. That was before. Now, of course, with the television, with the time.
Social media,
even more. A lot of people that don't speak dialect, especially the kids, and everybody talks Italian. They don't speak a dialect. I'm sorry. They don't speak a dialect.
They speak proper Italian.
Proper Italian. Yeah. But of course, you can understand if somebody comes from south, somebody comes from north, or other part of Italy, or some region, particular region.
So, what was it like for you growing up in Italy? You have some stories of growing up in Italy in Rofrano?
I grew up to 20 years old. I grew up in a small village. Small village. Where is it? Small village, especially in the south, is you have the sense of community. You know, there is the a Latin proverb to raise a child, you need a village. What does it mean? See, when you grow up in a small village, you are not the product of all your parents, the education of your parents at the school, but you are the proud of the surrounded, because there is so much for a child living in a small village, there is so much freedom. You don't have to worry about to go on the street. So even the old woman next door, they give you something. Maybe the moment you don't know, but in the long run, when you're older, you see, oh, wow, that person will give you something. So we are that special unique fortune, too. It's a fortune. Maybe, unfortunately, my kids, they don't have that kind of fortune. Because sometime over here, you say that I'm from Brooklyn. But where is it being Brooklyn? Just to say that, Brooklyn. But you know, it's not like when you don't know even the your next door who is.
Yeah. Whereas in Italy, you knew. A lot of times they were your cousins, they were your aunts, your uncles. You knew the people that you lived by.
Yeah, not just your family or this, but all the other people. So that's a real sense of community. And another thing that I think living in a small village, the community in a small village is the maximum example of democracy. Why? You see, when you live in a big city, not just in New York, all over the world, you separate. There are some people, you separate by their income. If you make 100, you live with one neighbor. If you have 50, you make another neighbor. If you have 1,000, you live with another neighbor. So these people, they never meet each other. Bottom. This is segregation. The wallet in this case make the segregation. Small village, no. You can see at the bar, play briscola, and a rich guy with a student from a leftist party. This kind of thing you never see in other kind of society and the kind of community. This is the beauty of the living in a small village, who grew up in a small village.
Because everybody knows each other, everybody has to interact with each other, because you're living next door to somebody, and it kind of forces you to get along.
You got along, and you build that sense of community that another. I have this kind of experience because I grew up, I was 28 when I came here, so I know very well the Italian culture, but I know very well American culture.
Yeah, you're the best of both worlds.
I took the best of both sides. So I go there very often. I go 3-4 times a year, and I know what is the difference.
So what was Rofrano like?
Rofrano
and
is...
Where is Rofrano?
Rofrano is in the Parco Nazionale del Cilento. It's 30 kilometers by the water. It's in the hills. It's an old community, more than 1,000 years. We have the history for more than 1,000 years. And, of course, that there is heart everywhere there, even if you don't know. But, you know, over the centuries, they layer so many art, so many different styles that you absorb that sense of beauty. That's one of the reasons that sometimes people say to me, but how come the Italian, they know how to make this thing better? Why? Even if they are not educated, especially those people, the Italian, they came here a long time ago, more than 100 years ago. Even though they're all farmers, but they lived in the village. And when you, the square of the village is like the living room of the village. Just when you walk there, you see a palace, big building, you see a church, a different church. If you don't know what kind of style is, Gothic, Baroque, Renaissance, you absorb. In your mind, you have that sense, you created that, or you built that harmony. And when you go in another country, even if you are not educated, but if you had to build something, you know how to proportion, how to make a thing nice.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. So let's talk a little bit about Ornella Trattoria. So you opened this about how many years ago?
11 years ago.
Okay. And again, the inspiration was taking some true regional Italian food and introducing it to New York City.
Some of them, yes. Yep. We have some we have to do business. We have some to Tonosca the customer. We have some traditional Italian American dishes that everybody, but we created some kind. I like to do twist. We created some kind of dishes very unique.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of these dishes that you create? Either that ones that you brought from Italy and ones that you create. Kind of talk a little bit about that.
There is one I create. I have an inspiration from Italy, from my hometown. Pasta di castagna, chestnut flour pasta. Basically, I create a different way. In my hometown, they call it triidi because they were made with three fingers. But also chestnut pasta at that time was, they used chestnut flour because integration of the regular flour, because there was not too much flour. So in order to make it more, because they need a bread, they put the additional 25% chestnuts, 25% chestnut flour. And they made it one way. So over here, I made it with 65-70% chestnut flour and 30% regular flour. I can do even 100%, but I know it's a little sweet. And but my customer love it that way.
How do you prepare it? How do you prepare?
We prepare with pistachio creams, pistachio sauce. So we do nuts and nuts. Pistachio is a kind of thing from Bronte near in Etna Vulcan, and which goes very well in nuts and nuts. In this case, we can say pasta and nuts. And with the cream, finish with the truffle.
Oh, wow. That sounds good.
Even that Channel 7 ABC was here just to talk about those dishes. You can see on my website, on Channel 7 segment.
What is your website?
www.ornellatrattoria.com.
So, but the name Ornella is the name
is the name of my wife. I think it's a nice name.
Yeah. And where is she? She's from the same town as you?
She's from, the parents is from same, close to the same region, but she was born in Torino because at that time in the 60s, a lot of those from south, they went to work in Torino, alla Fiat. So, but she came here when she was 9 years old. So she's a perfect bilingual. With no accent, no Italian or not.
So, Giuseppe, why do you think Italian cuisine is extremely popular, especially here in America?
But no, in America, it's popular everywhere. Even in Japan, in Tokyo, the 10% of the restaurant in Tokyo, they're Italians. So it's popular everywhere. Why? See, you don't see big cuisine if you don't see great culture behind. There is a reason why Chinese cuisine is popular, because Chinese is, they have thousands and thousands of years of civilization. French is the same thing. Italy is the same thing. We are, as a kind of cuisine, they can accommodate everybody. any kind of religious restriction. So most of the people, maybe they don't know that more than 50% of the Italian cuisine is vegetarian. And some of those, most of the, a lot of dishes, they are even vegan. We don't even know they were vegan. We are vegan until now. Yeah, yeah. Until now. We just eat. We test. So, but you know, we can accommodate everybody. We don't have because our religious basically is we don't have a religious restriction. We just if it's good, we eat it.
So a lot of recipes that, especially for Italians that came here during the first wave of immigration, late 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, they brought with them this cucina povera, this peasant's cuisine. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and how that grew into, I guess, Italian-American cuisine today.
But cucina povera, there was that time, and now is cucina ricca. Why? If you see all the most popular thing and expensive in the cuisine, they come from cucina povera, the peasant food. So see Nduja? Nduja, if you go to the market, the good Nduja costs $40 pounds. Why, just to give an example, why the Nduja was so popular, was so expensive, why? But it started in Calabria with, was a sausage. So the landlord, the rich man, they killed the pig like everybody, and they give it to the farmers, the leftover, the less noble parts of the pig. So in order to make them this kind of meat a little edible, they put a lot of picante, a lot of peperoncino. So over these years, this become like a delicacy. So that's one. Even the caviar, basically, is that was start with the cucina povera. Even the foie gras start with the cucina povera.
Yeah, yeah.
So some dish that cucina povera now we discover because why? Because there's flavor, in the flavor, and they build the flavor a different way. With at that time was. Very povera, was...
Yeah, so even like tripa, the tripe.
That's another thing. That's another thing that, you know, they call it quinto quarto.
The fifth quarter.
Quinto quarto, tripe, or pagliata, or other stuff. Why? Because that... So the cucina povera is like we use any parts of the animal, in this case animal, but you have to just cook a different way. The most expensive thing for the cow, for the beef is the T-bone. But no, that's a big one. It's a muscle that is very tender. But that meat you can eat even raw.
You
put a little salt. You don't need to be a master to make that. But there is other part of the animal with the bones and muscles. You have to cook a different way. To make it out, you cannot put on the grill. You have to make a nice ossobuco. What is ossobuco? It's muscles. It's a piece of muscle and bones. But if you cook slow cook, you season the right way, you create a masterpiece. What a dish, you create a masterpiece. The same thing with fegato, liver, the same thing with tripe. The only thing now, I love those kind of dishes, the only thing now, we don't eat it because we have a healthy reason. But otherwise, the Italians, they know how to give you flavor to any parts of the animal.
That's an interesting point you make, though, that we're afraid to eat a lot of these dishes nowadays because of health. But yet you think about Italy itself. You think about the people in Italy. They've eaten these dishes for 1,000 years, and a lot of times you go to these little towns, people are 80, 90, 100 years old, and yet they eat all the cholesterol, they eat all these fatty foods, but yet they still have a good life.
But that's a...
And here in America,
there is a more natural way. So if you see, when you live in New York for so many years that you go in the steakhouse, you have a nice piece of steak, like a tender, very, very tender. If you go in Italy, even at the best steakhouse there, if there is one, you say, but this is very tough. Why? Why is tough? Because it's most of the dishes, most of those animals, some of them, they are in free range. So it's like... It's like for Thanksgiving, instead of using the turkey that you buy in the supermarket, you go to shoot one wild turkey.
Yeah.
You see how tough is the wild turkey. Why? But that wild turkey, you have to cook a different way. And you see that it's tender too.
Yeah, so you really have to know, and I think that's what's great about the Italian personality, is that they know how to break down certain animals, or how to use even chichi beans or wild grass.
Chickpeas, many people they don't know that I make a pasta with the chickpeas, you know, just the pasta. I have a chickpeas flour.
Mm-hmm.
I make a pasta for people that have celiac, you know,
the gluten-free,
you know, all the stuff. Chickpeas in Italian cuisine is a big thing. We see chickpeas in other cultures, like especially India and North Africa, Morocco, that kind of thing. But in Italia, maybe they don't know, was the big thing under the Roman Empire. Roman, it took over all over the world and the known world, basically for the chickpeas. Why? Because now it's easy to supply the food for 100,000 people in Afghanistan and that. But at that time, it was very hard to supply food for an army. So what they do? The Roman, they just bring chickpeas, flour, with them. They put a little water in the desert. They make a little dough. They put on the shield. With the sun cooks like pastella things. They make a little pizza. The chickpeas was the meat of the poor, because it's complete food. It's like milk.
Yes,
you can eat
yes.
all your life. You can eat a chickpeas and live healthy.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, and it fills you up. A lot of all those, even lentils and all these more of these povera legumes. Yeah.
I'm fascinated about what is behind the dish.
Yes,
I'm not. See, now everybody do. I use Instagram too. Just the picture, but the picture is. This is porno, what do you call it? Porno food?
Food porn.
It's only 5% of the. I'm interested in what is behind the picture.
Behind the story.
And each Italian dish has a story.
Yes.
Has a story behind each Italian dish. And some of the stories, they are fantastic, fascinating.
So, can you give us an example of one of your favorite food stories?
And another one can be the carbonara. So, carbonara is a very popular Italian dish. But the first time we start to hear about carbonara was after the Second War. The reason, in the beginning of 1900, Arturo Pellegrini, which is he made the Bible of Italian cuisine, he didn't mention carbonara. Nobody mentioned carbonara. People, they say from Carbonia, the town. Oh, carbonara, because they were the revolutionary during the 1800s. I think the best description where the carbonara comes from is a kind of combination of American and Italian. So during the war, after the America liberated, they start to go from Sicily to north, they liberated Italy. That time, what they bring with them? Cheeses and bacon. Those two things, they last for a long time. Of course, a bunch of guys, soldiers, young guys, they went to some farm, they have those two things, in the farm they have pasta, eggs, mixed together, that's it, if you think about it.
That's simple. Yeah.
So the first time we heard about carbonara is after the Second War. So I think there is there's no doubt that the carbonara is a mix of American inspiration with Italian invention.
One of the dishes that you have here that's a seasonal dish at Ornella Trattoria is sanguinaccio. This is something that always fascinates me, sanguinaccio. It's one of my favorite things. It's a dessert. But can you explain for people out there that have no idea what sanguinaccio is, what it is?
So first of all, it started with all over Italy, all over. There was every family, just to kill in the small village, every family killed their own pig, because that was the only way to preserve the meat. Now we can preserve the meat all year round with the refrigerator, the freezer. But at that time, you know, we could preserve with the cured meat, dry cure, or smoked. There's no way. So when you kill this pig, nothing went to waste. Nothing. So what they do with the blood? The region where I come from, also Cilento and Calabria, those two south regions, we make a different way. We use the blood a different way. Any culture, they use a pig, they eat pig, Chinese, all North Europe, they use blood too, but they use as a food in the sausage. They mix it with the onions. We are the only one we use as a dessert. Personally, I think it's better than Nutella. It's my favorite dessert. What is it? You just put a different way. We can be a different way. You just mix it with some with the milk, or you can mix it with the cookies. You boil it for a long time at bagnomaria with a lot of sugar. And after you put the flavor, orange, I put the orange, I put cannella, cinnamon. And become like a pasta, like a Nutella thing. It tastes like, if I don't tell you what is it,
you have no idea.
You have no idea what it is, but even if a particular test, but very, very, very good test.
So it's a dessert. So I know a lot of times they serve it with chiacchiere, which
is... Yeah, chiacchiere is the way to serve it. But I like it just like that, just a spoon with the thing.
Just like eating chocolate pudding.
Just like you eat a chocolate pudding. Just a chocolate pudding. It's a particular dessert for also that time they killed the pig on winter time. So for the winter.
And also for Carnevale, right? They would have...
Carnevale is that on the chiacchiere, too, because, you know, that was available. Carnevale is in February, so it's still cold, it's available that time of the year. And just to give an idea what it was years ago, Sanguinacci, is like kids in America have peanut butter. No, that was our peanut butter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I want to kind of conclude our conversation here today, talking about the legacy of Italian cuisine, legacy of Ornella Trattoria. So give us a little bit of what you want your legacy to be.
But listen, I always say that I want to be an gastronomic evangelic guy. But we have to talk about I have to do business. In order to do business, you have to do something, some dishes. Normal dish like everybody does, but you know, if I do all that, I'm boring. It's like when you go in the same restaurant, you see the same dishes. After a little while, you change that. So I need some enthusiasm. The enthusiasm will give energy. So once in a while, I create always new dishes. My legacy is to bring in New York. I'm doing dishes that's very unique. Chestnut pasta is one of them, but we don't talk about another dishes very, very popular in my place, black garlic dishes. Black garlic dishes. So I don't want to be the biggest one, but I want to be the best. Just a few words about black garlic. Maybe most of your people that listen to your radio here that they don't know. Black garlic, first of all, is regular garlic fermented. After the fermentation, ferment at a certain temperature. The fermentation is you don't cook it. It's like when you change grapes to wine. Two different things. So after the fermentation, at the 12 days, the way I do, at the fermentation, I keep the temperature at 80 degrees Celsius. Celsius is like 142 degrees, which is hot, but no, you don't cook it. It becomes black. But it's not just to change the color, like when we go to the beach, we change the color. Doesn't taste like a garlic anymore. I can let you taste some. Taste like, but keep all the nutrition facts of the regular garlic, because the garlic is a superfood. It's good for the cholesterol. It's good for the blood pressure. It's good for the metabolism. What kind of flavor is it? Flavor is like balsamic vinegar.
Really?
Inside. So I got, this is a Korean tradition, the last 50 years, not the big one. So when I discovered this 4 years ago, I tried to adapt it to my Italian cuisine. So what is the best way? I experiment with the pasta. I put, after the fermentation, I put in the blender with seasoning, virgin olive oil, but you can put anything you want. You can even make a dessert with that.
Really?
And after I make it like a pesto, and we put in the completely black. If you see in the picture, it looks like Nero di Sepia, like black ink. It's totally different. One of the most healthy dish you can ever.
And then you serve it over a pasta?
With the pasta, yeah. With the pasta, it's like completely black. You can see on my Instagram page, on my website, you see those pictures that you see those picture of black. It's very unique. So that's my thing. Mm-hmm. Create a very unique thing. Another thing too is all the meat we serve here, like the cured meat, we cure in my farm in the Catskill.
You cure your own meat.
Yeah, we can see that video there on my Facebook page.
Really?
You can see we do prosciutto, we do bresaola, we do lamb prosciutto, which is very, very popular. Beside that, sausage, pancetta, cured pancetta, all the stuff there.
And what was the inspiration to do that? Why did you decide to make your own?
It's not such a thing as inspiration. Why? But first of all, how I grew up in this kind, like I said, I grew up in this kind of environment, surrounded by food. Now with the globalization, We buy something here in America, we just buy the name, even with the food. Sometimes we buy the name and brand. Sometimes, just because it's Italy doesn't mean it's the best. Why prosciutto di Parma is so popular? Why? Because how they start? They start because it's the farmers used to make cheeses. They remain on the cheese or the liquid stuff, they feed the pig. And there was so much nutrients on that. The pig are healthy. The climate was good, Pianura Padana, north of Italy there. High humidity, and they make a good prosciutto. So this kind of system, they transfer in, adapted to the commercialize, which is great. But there is so much demand now for prosciutto, Lego pork, prosciutto is just Lego pork. Italy cannot supply all that. Most of them, they come from some area where there is not much control about this food. Most of them come from Romania, from Moldavia, all the stuff there. What they do? They do in a big warehouse, a big building. They feed the pigs, and then they cannot move it. They never see the sun. They never breathe the fresh air. Up to become a certain weight. They call the truck refrigerated from Italy. Go there, they kill it. They put in the thing, they put in the in the walking box, in the refrigerator, in the truck. They bring in Parma, they work it, they put in a warehouse there. Everything is computerized. They follow the system, so they make a good product.
But it loses
something. So yeah. Basically, what is it? It can be that we eat some of those kind of meat. They never, the animal never breathe fresh air or see the sun. So I thought about, listen, we are fortunate in America that we have a climate zone in America. You have to just know the know-how. Of course, if you want some of the, you cannot make a perfect prosciutto salami in New York because that is really humid. But Catskill or some part or other part of America, Virginia, they are perfect. There is a right perfection of amount of humidity and dryness. So I tried years ago. I have my farmhouse there, and I cure my meat. Some of the meat is local farmers, and my customer, they appreciate very, very, very much. We just have recognized in some charcuterie competition.
It's kind of a passion project.
We do like a tagliere kind of thing, cutting board, mm-hmm. all for my product, for my things.
That's wild.
So this is the kind of thing when I do something different that mm-hmm. you cannot see other places. And we explain to the customer that it's all cured with salt, no artificial thing, because we make all in the winter time. We make all in the winter time mm-hmm. because the winter pig. Why they make a, they kill the pig? Used to kill the pig in the winter time because the pig has some kind of can have some germ, some kind of virus, and the cold kills everything. If you put the salt. Cold, the salt kills everything. So all in the winter time we make this.
So by the time summer and spring came around, when the temperatures got warm, it was ready to.
It's already ready to eat. So it's full of salt, so it doesn't go bad. Even if you see a prosciutto, a real prosciutto, in 70 degrees, 75 or 80 degrees, still good.
Yeah.
Because you see that is a cure already.
And that curing process is what makes it edible, which makes it, you can eat with these, it's technically not raw anymore. It's cured.
It's a cure.
Yeah.
It's a cure. This is one of those, our, it's a background for our culture. This is before the Roman, the Etruscan, they start to make those kind of cure meat. Because of the temperature of the Mediterranean area, Italy, Spain, French, some part, is perfect for that, for cure meat. The North, Europe, they are more specialized in a different way to cure meat, to preserve the meat, mm-hmm. smoke it. So in Italy, we don't have that kind of thing because the temperature was perfect. We don't need it to smoke. We just cure.
Okay, so Giuseppe, you're also on Instagram. You're on Facebook. So how can people find Ornella Trattoria and Giuseppe Vitarale?
We have a page on Facebook. Very popular is Ornella Trattoria Italiana. And we are on Instagram. We have almost 20,000 followers.
Wow.
all the pictures are mine, a lot of videos. Ornella.trattoria.
I'm sure if you Google Ornella Trattoria and the story of Queens, you will find.
Now there is no reason that you cannot find somebody. You can even a blind they can find a place. So.
Actually, before we wrap up, I do want to ask, why did you choose the story of Queens to open up your restaurant?
My original was not intentional. So I live in Williamsburg, and this is so after they sold the place, I want to make just a business, but no Italian restaurant. And this was a Brazilian restaurant. I was thinking to make a little, three, four, these little places. But it was not like this. I thought I'd change it completely. So after the first day I was here, I realized what a big mistake I made. So I changed it completely and put an Italian restaurant.
That's great. I'm glad you did. Yeah. So, Giuseppe, I want to thank you again for taking some time out to spend with us here at the table with Tony to talk about a little about your history, about the history of the Trattoria, and this amazing food that you have here in Astoria, Queens. So, again,
you
want
to try the sanguinaccio?
Yeah, we'll try the sanguinaccio.
Pino, can you make it to sanguinaccio?
So, again, I am Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of At the Table with Tony. We'll see you next time. Ciao for now.
At the Table with Tony would like to thank its sponsors. Rocco Muriale, Rob Quick, Joseph Cirillo, Raymond Guarini, Tom Gilmore, Oli G, Peter Ziza, Brian McGuire, Peter Ferreira, Rich Ottenstrauer, Anna Mavrianos, Antonio Pepinella, Anthony Ferraro, Sandra and Bob Lamotta, Mike Guerro, the Italian Enclaves Historical Society.